How do we use AI?
Without letting the robots take over.
AI saves time. AI saves you money. We hear it all the time, but what is AI costing you when you turn over creative control? As a business owner who creates content to build my business and educate service-based business owners who podcast, I want my content to appear in search results. I want to be found. And then when someone magically finds my content and presses play or reads my blog post, I want them to immediately feel some kind of feeling or connection with me. You know, when you discover somebody for the first time on social media or you hear them on a podcast and you immediately think, oh yeah, she's my people. She gets it. She gets me. My guest in this episode is Emily Gertenbach, and she's been writing SEO content for a variety of clients since 2010. Emily is connecting the dots for us between SEO strategy, high-quality content, and the emotional impact that words have on readers to create connection. This isn't going to be some doom and gloom, dump on AI episode. I mean, I'm doing this entire series on AI because I'm fascinated with how we can use it to enrich and enhance our creativity and streamline our workflow. This is a conversation about how to keep your content strategic and deeply human without getting swallowed up by this AI shortcut culture. There are three key takeaways I want you to listen for. The first one is what happens when a brand's copy feels off. Emily is a hockey fan and shares a real-life example from the world of women's pro hockey. The second takeaway is, could your AI-written content actually be tanking your Google rankings over time? Emily breaks down how generative AI can give the illusion of great SEO performance in the short term, but why that quick win might cost you long-term visibility. And finally, how can you still show up in Google's top results without gaming the algorithm? Emily shares six core elements that have consistently helped her clients rank, and none of these involve keyword stuffing, hacks, or gaming the system. Let's get to it. Emily Gertenbach has been creating SEO content since 2010. She's worked with a wide variety of clients from local agencies to internationally recognized software companies considered to be on the leading edge of user experience and design. And Emily understands that as tempting as it is to try to please the ever-changing Google algorithm, the need for real, humanized content remains constant, which is one of the reasons I am so excited to be chatting with her about AI and where it fits into SEO and content. So, Emily, welcome.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me, and thank you for the lovely intro.
You're welcome. Thank you for writing such a lovely intro that it was very easy to find on your website. I appreciate that. How would you describe your relationship with AI?
Fraught. It is a fraught relationship. Yeah, it's, I could talk for probably hours on unpacking my relationship with AI, but we'll keep it condensed for today.
Fantastic. So what is it about AI that is so fraught?
So to explain why I feel that way about AI, I have to step back a minute and just clarify what exactly I'm talking about here. So a lot of times when we talk about AI right now, we think of tools like ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And that dominates a lot of the news conversation about AI. But tools like ChatGPT are very specifically generative AI. So when you use ChatGPT or Claude or whatever Meta has these days in their apps, that's a generative AI and it's predictive. So it's been fed tons of data, including writing that's online, which we can talk about. And it's using essentially math to predict what the most next likely word in a phrase will be. So if I say, hello, how, it's going to do math and it's going to come up with predictions that the most next likely word would be you. How are you? Hello, how are you? Now, there's another type, we'll say, of AI too. There's AI that falls under the broader umbrella of more general machine learning. So if you've noticed, probably a lot of the tools you use, I know tools like ClickUp, Monday have done this, and one I use called ClearScope, they start smacking the word AI on everything, but the tool isn't noticeably different than it used to be. So that can seem confusing. What it is for a long time now, years and years and years, we've had artificial intelligence at our fingertips. Siri and Google Assistants that use your voice and your phone, that's a form of AI, and machine learning. To-do apps that automatically tag things for us based on what we type in, handwriting recognition apps on an iPad, those all use forms of AI. So that's my long way of getting to the point that right now, what's giving me a fraught relationship with AI is not that older form of machine learning where we're using computer processes to speed up routine tasks, to apply labels, maybe to sort through all the data in a spreadsheet and come up with, you know, a summary for us. My issue is with generative AI, and the issue is two-pronged. One, I have a problem with the fact that generative AI tools exist because they've been trained on often copyrighted data made by writers, artists, musicians, other creators. There's been no financial compensation for that. And also, it really grinds my gears that it's being touted as a replacement for those human creators. It is not in any way, shape, or form. Whether you want to use it to create an image or you want to use it to write a blog post, there are issues with that. There are issues with the quality that it puts out. And if someone who is not an artist, not a writer, not a blogger is using it, they may not have the professional expertise to spot those errors. And then we continue to run into more issues.
That's a lot.
Yes, that was a very long answer.
On your website, you've got a fantastic blog post that you've written about why you cannot rely on AI to write your critical brand content. So can you share a little bit of that, your thoughts on that here? And then I'm also going to put a link in the show notes so people can go check that for more detail.
Sure. So I'm glad you enjoyed that post, and it is something I feel really strongly about. So an increasing number of brands are starting to use AI to write key blurbs for their site, landing pages, blog posts. And part of the issue is that what it generates, the output you get, is extremely formulaic. So as I mentioned earlier, generative AI is a predictive process. It cannot create net new ideas. And even if what it's spitting out is not plagiarism in the sense that, you know, not like you're lifting an essay from your friend in school.
Right.
But it is spitting out recombinations of things that have already existed. It is programmatically impossible for it to come up with something that is as completely new and unique as you or I might with our human brains and our human vocabularies. And when you do that, it strips an emotion out of it. And I know that can sound very esoteric, but one of the examples I put on my website is, so if I ask ChatGPT to create a haiku poem about rain, it's not going to give me something that's an actual piece of musing on rain and how it smells and how it sounds. It is going to give me three lines of words that are statistically likely to appear next to each other when the word rain is involved and the word haiku is involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to wind up with something extremely top level. And what really got me thinking about this for my blog was I am a big fan of the professional women's hockey league, Go Boston Fleet. And when they rolled out their team names, the content seemed off to me. It seemed like maybe it was written by AI. And I'm not part of the league's marketing team. I'm not saying they did or did not use AI. I'm just saying what I saw as a fan, my perception as someone who uses AI tools a lot in researching them and testing them for work, read as AI to me. It didn't have the, you know, sports can be a very personal thing. You know, I live in the Boston area. I live a few blocks from the stadium. I was all hyped for the team to get a name. I know there's fans in New York and Montreal and Toronto who feel the same way. And the descriptions of the team names didn't seem to be written by anyone who had passion about those cities. So I fed the descriptions through an AI evaluator, which is not 100%, but they got pretty high scores. And I was let down. I was disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
As a fan of the team who'd been waiting for a year for these teams to get their official names, because when the teams first launched, they didn't have names and mascots. I was let down. I was like, I feel really strongly about the Boston Fleet. I want to have this written by someone who's hyped up about it, who's hyped up about New York, who's hyped up about Montreal. And that didn't happen. And so I'm still a fan, of course. I still go to the games.
Yeah.
But it actually made me sad, and it made me feel a little differently about the organization. And I thought, you know, again, I can't say for sure whether they did or not. It's just the perception I got. But it made me think about how many people I know who might be using AI for their brand content. They might be inadvertently letting people down because it doesn't have that human connection to it. It feels robotic.
Yeah. And with something like a sports team that is so personal.
Yeah.
Maybe if you would have had a woman write it about the hockey team.
I'm right here. I could have written it.
It's not like they couldn't find somebody.
Yeah.
Did you go look at the descriptions for the other teams?
Oh, yeah.
And did it all kind of feel the same?
Yeah. I read them all. I fed them all through an AI evaluator. They did not score very human. And again, I know that isn't foolproof, but I am someone who's tested these tools a lot for my clients and for work and for research. And so I was reading pretty AI to me. And the descriptions were actually taken off the website eventually after I published my blog post. Not saying I had anything to do with that. Just saying that is a thing that happened.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
So have you had clients say, hey, you know, I guess we don't need you anymore. Now we've got AI. It's magic. It's really good, Emily. You should check it out. Are you having those conversations, or are they like, so Emily, what do you really do now that we have this tool?
Luckily, I have not had those conversations. I am lucky that I have my recurring clients I've been with for some time now, and I'm lucky that they all really recognize the value of having, you know, a human creating content. Some of my clients are interested in exploring ways to use AI in the process, not to create the end result, but can it be used to help parse data? Can it be used to help speed up the process of pulling statistics out of reports? How can it be used in the proofreading process? So I have worked on some projects with my clients where we're looking at ways to incorporate AI in the content planning and production process, but I am not using it, you know, to write the bulk of content. I have experimented with using it to write meta descriptions, which is like the one sentence preview that appears in Google search.
Yeah.
Because those get changed by Google half the time anyway. So it's just kind of see what happens, testing ground.
Yeah, right.
But luckily my clients are not, you know, replacing me with AI. I have heard of that happening, especially in situations where the creator doesn't have as longstanding of a relationship with their client as I do, but luckily that hasn't happened. But I'm also at a point where I would decline to use AI for writing. Like if one of my clients came to me and they said, hey, so going forward, we're just going to have someone generate AI blog posts and you're going to just judge them up. You're going to massage it and make it feel human. I would say, no, that is not what I do.
How do you, as a business owner, position yourself and differentiate yourself from AI so that they do see that value? Especially if somebody's listening and they don't have that long-standing relationship.
Yeah, so for me, it comes down to metrics. AI, anyone who's seeking to work with me is generally looking for SEO content. That is the bulk of what I do. And SEO content does not perform well in Google search historically. Like if you publish a piece right now, it may shoot to the top, but it will not stay there. And I have some metrics that I've pulled myself that some other people I trust in my industry have some research they've done. I've got some of that on my website. And, you know, so the thing that happens is when you hear about brands saying, oh, hey, this is going to disrupt your marketing. You got to use our AI tool to disrupt your workflow. And you're going to look at all this content we got at the top of the Google search result. They're showing you one tiny snippet. And a lot of times what they're doing is they're creating a high volume of low quality AI content and pushing it online. And that high volume, there's so much of it on related topics that their site is going to rise to the top of search results at first, but over the course of 3 to 4 months, they're not going to be able to maintain that rank because as their site continues to be indexed and Google continue and other search engines continue to evaluate this new content against quality metrics, it is going to be considered lower quality and it will be demoted. So the only way to stay at the top of search results if you're using AI is to just never stop churning out content. It is a continual stream. So me, I come in and I say, look, I get it. That's appealing. But do you really want to spend all of your time coaxing ChatGPT into spitting out content? You have better things to do than that.
That sounds absolutely terrible.
It does. It does. It's completely soul-sucking, yeah. No matter who you are. And
right.
Also really annoying because they keep updating ChatGPT and it starts adding a bunch of emojis and like finger guns and rocket ships. And oh, it's awful. So I can come in and I can create maybe 3, 5, 10 blog posts for you, and they're going to stay at the top of search results. Like I have, again, on my website, I have screenshots of graphs and metrics that show you this. I have written content for clients that has stayed in the number one spot for years. It is just really consistent. It gets up there quickly. I can get content that I've written from scratch to rank on established domains in a matter of days, and it can stay there for months, for years. So yes, there is more of an upfront investment to hire me than to pay $20 a month for ChatGPT, but ultimately you're going to not find yourself caught in this endless content spiral when you work with a human.
SEO just in general is kind of overwhelming, I think.
Yes.
You know, because algorithms. And so how is it changing now with AI and, you know, whatever pleases the great Google gods this week?
That is very accurate. It is overwhelming. And we do have to please the great Google gods. And I'm an anomaly in the SEO world. I don't love Google, which is that could be a whole other podcast in itself, my feelings on the Google enterprise. So traditionally, before AI ever rolled out into search, for years, at the top of many search results, there would be a paragraph that was highlighted. Maybe there'd be a video, maybe a photo. That was called the featured snippet. And that still exists, but it is increasingly getting replaced by the dubiously helpful AI overview. That's the thing that sometimes tells people to put glue in their mac and cheese and eat rocks. So we're all birds. So it is to get your content put into the AI overview. That's the biggest change that's happened. Google used to be, there was just content listed in a line, websites you could click on. Then it was ads and then websites. Mm-hmm. Then it was the featured snippet and then ads and then websites. Now it's the AI overview and then more ads and then your websites. So now a lot of people want to land in the AI overview because it is the number one number one spot on Google. So the way to do that is to approach creating content like you would for the featured snippet, which is the way that you do that. Is you really focus on not what does the algorithm want, but what does the human end user want? Because despite mm-hmm. all the layers of algorithms and Google being like, maybe we changed something, maybe we didn't, wouldn't you like to know? At the end of the day, this is all geared to one, make Google money, and two, feed information to humans. So setting aside Google making money, you got to focus on feeding information to humans. So what does the human end user want to know? What is the search intent for that query? When you go to that page, are you seeing people mostly putting up sales pages, long blog posts, interviews? That gives you an idea of what people are expecting, what people want, and creating a similar type of content can help you appear in that AI overview, appear high up in search. Also, just providing real value. The number of times I go to a website, here's an example for you. So I have recently taken up swimming. I'm trying to swim long distances. I was curious how many arm strokes it takes the average intermediate swimmer to go 25 meters. I looked online. I clicked on the first result. I got some AI SEO schlock that one of the subheads was, can you swim with banana peels on your feet? And this is actually a good example of why AI doesn't work for SEO, because there's, if you go on to like the swimming subreddit, there's a lot of people who ask, hey, my feet cramp up when I swim. What do I do? And the solution is to eat a banana. You need more potassium. So feet and bananas. The idea is you eat the banana. But AI, generative AI doesn't understand that. So someone wrote this blog post and they used generative AI, and generative AI was like, well, there's a lot of content that pairs feet with bananas. So it spit out, can you swim with banana peels on your feet? When in actuality, it should have been, how can bananas help you swim better? So you want to create real values. You don't want to use AI and rely on just what the AI says, because you might wind up with something like that where I'm the end user. I'm thinking, I got off that website so fast. I think they were selling a swimming plan app, but I wouldn't know. I'm never going to give them my money. So really focusing on the human and actual real value is key.
So it's really the same thing that we've done for years and years.
Yeah, it's really the same thing we've done for years and years. It's easy to get caught up in the whole, oh, well, Google did this, Google did that, but they're not very transparent. And trying to keep up with all the things you think Google might have changed, it just doesn't get you anywhere in the long run. I have another blog post on my website where I talk about something called the searcher's hierarchy of needs. And it is six things that you need to focus on in order to achieve good rank. And it does not matter whether there's an AI overview on the search result page. It does not matter if Google says they've updated an algorithm recently. Like, over the past 15 years, these are the six things that have remained consistent that you can focus on. But
so it sounds like I have some more homework to do.
Everyone has homework to do. I always have homework to do. You know, there's always something new. There's always something new to learn. But these six things are a good place to start. It's focusing on accessibility, comfort, readability, connectivity, privacy, and trust. But you can't use AI to do a lot of those. And I explain more of that on the site. Yeah. But it is a very human process. It needs to be by humans and for humans.
I kind of feel like that is just the bottom line of all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So, you know, when you hear about SEO being the great disruptor and it's going to revolutionize everything. Yeah, it's probably going to revolutionize how fast you can sum up data in a spreadsheet, and can be great for pulling out if there's a long PDF report that you've read and you just wanted to pull out certain facts and figures, it can be really helpful for that. It can also be helpful for if you give it a style guide and you say, hey, now read the style guide. Now check this article and make sure that I adhere to the style guide. It's not 100% accurate, but it can be very helpful for that. It's like a beefed up spell check. But when it comes to actually creating content, it cannot create new things. It can't create new pictures. It can't create new videos. It can't create new content. None of it's actually original. And that's the big problem.
Do you have any AI tools that you as a business owner are currently using that you're like, oh, this tool was amazing though. Like, it really helped me with a process or something like that. So not necessarily writing based.
So not generative. So because generative tools are so text and image based, I play around with them. So I'm aware of what they're doing, and you know, if they ever get better and I'm suddenly wrong, great, then I'll know. But for me, I do use and have for a long time used really helpful tools that use that broader form of AI, that machine learning, artificial intelligence, not generative, but based in data. So one I really like is called ClearScope. It does not have a generative aspect to it. It uses machine learning to analyze what's currently ranking highly in search results pages and gives me as a writer and an SEO consultant feedback about what is and is not working for those competitors so that I can create content that is more likely to outrank them. Great SEO tools like SE Ranking and SEMrush and Ahrefs, those have all used variants on artificial intelligence and machine learning for a long time. I still use those. They have rolled out some generative features across the different platforms. Again, I don't find them useful. So for me, you know, I am not a numbers person. I'm a words person. So these tools help me analyze data sets that have existed. So that's what I still rely on. But I've been using those tools since before they were, I had AI smacked on the label with a little sparkle emoji.
Oh, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of sparkle emojis happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's become the sort of industry standard logo for that. One other AI tool that I think does have potential, and this is a generative tool, but I think it has potential for helping business owners within their workflow, is Notion AI. So if you are someone who uses Notion to type a lot of documents up, you can add the AI on and it can have more contextual understanding about your workspace, and it can help you find information from within your own knowledge base. That interests me. The Notion interface just doesn't work well with my brain, so I don't keep my documents in Notion, but I think that intrigues me. One caveat, though, is that anytime you feed information into any tool with a generative AI aspect, there is a chance that it can be used to train those models. And sometimes when you pay for them, like when you pay for ChatGPT, it says, your data will not be used to train the workspace, but that doesn't mean they can't see it. It's not encrypted. So when you feed the data in, it's not private. It might not be used to further advance the algorithm's ability to pair together words and sound like you, but it's not private.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on, so, you know, I work with a lot of podcasters or business owners that are like, you know, I'll help them do the launch. And then they're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, take care of my editing and show notes and all of that stuff myself. I'm like, great, fantastic. What are your thoughts about the tools to like summarize the show notes and then create blog posts or social media? Because, you know, we've got to repurpose absolutely everything that's ever come out of our mouths now.
Yeah.
So as far as like, I do love it for timestamps and sometimes just giving me the summary of like, what did I actually talk about in this episode? So helping me kind of categorize things, but what are your thoughts? Are there any caveats with that?
Yeah, I think it can definitely be beneficial for that. I mean, if you're giving a piece of content that you've spoken or you've written and asking it to summarize it into a blurb or timestamp it, that is a, you know, from a human or brand aspect, I think that's still okay because you are the one creating it. You're just getting a quick summary. It still is going to have that human feel to it because you didn't have the AI generated. It just condensed a snippet for you or added timestamps. Yeah. I used to work as a news correspondent, like for newspapers, and I would use AI transcription tools well before we were even talking about generative AI because it was super handy to have, you know, I'm going to sit in a township board meeting for 4 hours. I'm not going to remember everything I heard. So it's great to have this transcript to refer back to. So I definitely think that there's benefit there. There's value there. I will use AI to like transcribe a video when I do one for my YouTube page so I can upload the caption file. And I don't want to completely shit on AI because it, generative AI, because it does have some benefits for accessibility, things like that, and helping folks work in different ways. But the thing to be aware of is, again, every time you upload a transcript, upload a blog post you've written to AI and want it to timestamp or summarize, you are giving the AI companies more information to train and improve their models with. So just going back to what I just said, everyone has to decide what their own level of risk is. So if I'm creating a YouTube video for my YouTube channel, it's going on the internet. It's going to be crawled by who knows what. It's going to be fed into a bunch of AI tools. So at that point, yes, I will take the transcript. I have an app on my computer that will, I don't put it in ChatGPT, but it's an app on my computer that uses AI to transcribe it and put the timestamp so I can export the SRT file and, you know, have a nice captions there for people for accessibility purposes. For me, it's like, okay, I don't really want to train the machine, but the video is going to be used to train the machine anyway, so whatever. But I am more hesitant about putting, say, a blog post into it because, yes, that can be scraped and used to train AI. There are ways to block AI from your website, and I don't want to train it on my voice. I also don't put any of my client content in there unless a client has their own enterprise license that I have access to. And they very specifically asked me to test something within their licensed space because I'm creating content for clients that is confidential. And so if I'm feeding it into an AI tool that I have access to, a generative AI tool, especially a free one, then that becomes a bit of a privacy issue.
Yeah, I feel like the whole privacy issue and, you know, disclosure and all of that stuff. It's, I feel like we're just at the tip of the iceberg with all of this.
Yes, we are. And I am, of course, by no means, I'm not a lawyer. I'm studying on my own for my own interest, AI governance best practices, but I'm not. I haven't gone to university for this. I'm not officially licensed in it. So with that caveat,
right.
Generally speaking, it is important to put a disclaimer on anything that you are creating with generative AI so that people know. And I also think it's really important to put a disclaimer or a note on things when the people you're collaborating with might have their likeness or their voice fed through AI. Like, I get very uncomfortable when I get on to, I mean, a podcast recording like this, I'm not uncomfortable because I know it's going to be transcribed. That's just how these things have worked for a long time.
Yeah.
But I feel uncomfortable when I get onto a random Zoom call with maybe some people I don't know, maybe it's a networking call, and mm-hmm. some of the attendees have various AI meeting assistants joining. I consented to our podcast interview today, and I know you, and I know, you know, I trust yeah. you. When I get on a meeting with some people who maybe I've never met in a networking group, how is my likeness being used? Is it being stored in their company's transcription tool? What is this? And I think there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of kind of establishing best practices around how do we interact with each other in the presence of AI.
And I will not clone your voice.
Oh, I trust that.
Which completely freaks me out.
Yes, I will not give my voice or my face to any AI tool. That is one I will not try out. Like if a client asks mm-hmm. me to test out a new generative AI chat tool or whatever, sure, I'll play around with it and let you know what I think. I'm probably not going to love it, but keep an open mind.
Sure.
I will not test any video or voice AI cloning tools. Hard no.
Same.
Yeah.
Have we missed anything? Anything that you are like, I do not want to wrap this up until I have gotten this piece of AI information off of my chest?
Nothing major. One last thing. I mean, we really covered a lot. One last thing I will say is that I don't want anyone who's using AI to come away from this feeling bad about it. Like if someone is listening right. and you're a business owner and you've been using AI to write blog posts, I don't want anyone to feel bad about that. We're all navigating what this is, but I just really want to emphasize that it's not, at this point in time, it is not a way of creating marketing assets that work in the long term. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the idea of creating your own content and you don't have the budget to hire an illustrator or a photographer or a writer, I would suggest trying to use AI on the back end, we'll say, as much as possible, and not on the output, not on what people are going to see. So maybe you have some ideas and you want to use ChatGPT to help you outline them into a blog post. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you did write a blog post and like we talked about, you want to repurpose it into some snippets. I think that can, there's certainly a lot of good that can come from that. But to get business marketing assets that are going to last a long time, a human does have to be creating it. So I would rather someone put more time in, I'd rather someone use ChatGPT to come up with a list of blog topics, because when it comes to marketing, there are only so many things that we can talk about. We are all talking about the same thing eventually. I'd rather use AI to come up with a list of blog topics and outline a blog post, and then they write it themselves. Like you're actually writing mm-hmm. the content versus someone coming up with a bunch of ideas on their own and then having ChatGPT write them, because that's going to be less human in the long run.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode today.
Thank you for letting me come on and rant about AI. It's one of my favorite things to talk about.
It has been super enlightening and just eye-opening.
Good.
Which I think all of these conversations that I have are going to be, because it's just from such a place of curiosity. Like, it's cool, but what do we need to know? And how do we not suck the life out of our work and still really, I mean, for me, any piece of content should ultimately be about creating some kind of connection.
Yes.
Or impact.
Yeah, well, it goes back to that feeling I had with the sports teams where I suspected they were using AI. It made me feel less connected. So yeah, mm-hmm. it is all about that human connection, and a computer can't replicate that.
And speaking of connection, if any of our fantastic listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they connect with you?
Amazing segue. They can connect with me on LinkedIn. Just look up Emily Gertenbach. You can follow my page. I post a lot of updates there. You can also visit my website at egcreativecontent.com.
Yeah, go read some of those blogs, friends. They are really good.
There's more coming.
Friends, AI is not your shortcut to creating a connection and building trust with your audience. Emily gave us a real-life look at how AI can support our content creation, but we can't turn over creative control. If you want your content to build a lasting relationship with your audience, it's got to start with you. Did you know about the 6 core elements that you need to include in your content? I'm going to include the link to Emily's blog post on the searcher's hierarchy of needs. Read it and then DM me on LinkedIn or Instagram at @BrassyBroadJen. Tell me what you learned and how you're going to implement that into your content strategy. I'll have a link to the blog in the show notes. And if you're ready to get more out of your podcast, but right now it feels like it's just one more thing on your long list of to-dos, or maybe you aren't even sure what the next step is to take to build that deeper connection with your audience, book a podcast power hour with me. We'll get you unstuck, out of your own way, and moving forward with a strategy that works for you, your show, and your audience. You bring the questions, I'll bring the clarity. Thanks for tuning in. Now get out in the world and do some good.